when a computer can do that better than a human can do it. And that human, it's not like the funnest job in the world. It kind of sucks. And so why not allow that person to have a better job, learn new skills, you save time as a company, and you have create a better candidate experience.
Hello, and welcome to the Talent Acquisition Leaders Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Dull. And on this show, we interview today's industry leaders in talent acquisition to discuss challenges, best practices, and what the future holds. If you are working in talent acquisition and have always wanted to sit down with your peers at other companies to exchange ideas and learn, well, this show is the next best thing. Join us each week as we bring you a new expert interview and extract their expertise. This episode is brought to you by SageMark HR. Transform your recruiting practices with leading-edge technology. Selecting the right recruiting solutions to enable your strategy is one of the biggest challenges leaders face today. You know technology will help, but searching all the options to find out what will work best for your specific needs can be both overwhelming and time-consuming. At SageMark HR, we make selecting the right recruiting technology easy. Our proven process has helped companies such as 3M, Comcast, Stryker, Walgreens, and many more. Reach out to us at SageMark HR for a free consultation to learn how we can help you improve results with less stress and confidently change from reacting to leading.
Hey everybody, my name is Phil Strazula. I run a website called Select Software Reviews, where we publish a ton of free content about what's going on in the HR tech world. I started my career off working in venture capital, doing investing in software companies. Then I went to business school and taught myself how to program and started my own HR tech business. And then about 3 years ago, I started SSR as a blog, basically as a side project. Every month now, over 60,000 companies use our advice to figure out what software they should be buying.
Great. And I'm Ryan Dull. I'm the CEO of SageMark. My entire professional career has been spent kind of in the talent space and talent acquisition space. First part of my career was on the corporate side, where I led in a lot of transformational efforts in corporate talent acquisition, whether it be a full-blown transformation or centralization efforts for larger organizations, high-volume recruiting shop. And then started at SageMark 8 years ago. With SageMark, we're very focused on helping talent acquisition leaders modernize their recruiting practices and scale. How we do that is usually around building out custom plans for their technology that they need to support their vision. And we've worked with over 200 different organizations to build custom plans and technology roadmaps. Our goal is really to help make the very challenging aspect of identifying the right solutions for your specific needs, help make that real easy for our clients. And so, Phil, excited to talk to you today.
Yeah, as I just said off camera, I do always learn something new whenever we chat, even though we've talked many times at this point. So I'm excited for the conversation. Interested to hear your take on what you're seeing in the marketplace in this sort of hiring market.
Yeah, and I learn a lot from you too as well. Like I really appreciate the opportunity to connect always. And I think, you know, this, as I mentioned, I've been in the talent space for 26, going on 27 years. And this is hands down the most challenging market or environment I've ever seen. I think so much has changed in the last couple of years that has completely altered what's successful in this market. Some of the challenges, I mean, obviously you had COVID impacts, you have remote work impacts, you have the great resignation, you have the turnover that impacts folks. I think you have a supply and demand issue in the market around talent and job availability. I also think, you know, one of the major impacts is just not only is it now has shifted to very much a candidate market, if you will, but it's just behaviors and expectations have dramatically changed over the last couple of years around what an experience should look like, what a job should look like, how I pick that, how long I'm going to be at it, how I view that. Like all of those things have dramatically changed, which makes it a very different market and a very challenging market. I don't know, what else would you add to that?
I would totally echo all that. The great resignation, I think people's perceptions of work have changed. And part of it is some people got to sort of live the good life. I remember meeting a guy over the summer of 2020, and he was talking about how he's making more money now than he'd ever made before. And I said, you don't mind me asking, what do you do that's doing so well during COVID? And he said, oh, I'm unemployed. I think that there's a lot of folks that are just like, why am I going to go back to this job that I don't want to do? And that could be somebody who is making $15 an hour or somebody who's making $100,000 a year. So there's that change. Most companies are offering flexible work, remote work. There's a supply demand imbalance. I read that one day last week, like 16,000 new recruiter jobs were posted on LinkedIn in like one day. That's crazy. And so every company is now struggling to fill this gap. And I think they're trying to throw bodies at it, right? They're trying to throw resources at it. And I think there are a couple companies that are probably doing it slightly more intelligently, and they're going to have better results. But dislocation is definitely hitting people hard. And I think what's sort of interesting is that I don't know if there are many ends in sight. Like some of the trends that we saw catalyze with remote work, just more flexible work, focus on skills-based hiring, et cetera, during the pandemic, they were happening already. And I think they're just accelerating. And even if we come out of, you know, this thing in the next couple of months here, it's just going to continue to change and evolve. And I think that anybody out there in the business world hearing that, I'm going to start spending 10% of my time on just like learning new stuff, learning new technology, new skills, new frameworks. And I'm going to do that by consuming content, networking with the smartest people that I can find, going to the most forward-thinking conferences, and really investing in myself, because it's, you know, personally something selfishly you need to do, but also it's something that you need to do for your company as well.
Yeah, I think those are all really good points. And I think you brought up the fact that all of the recruiter posting 16,000 or 14,000 in a day. And I think that that's another part of this challenge in this challenging environment is before, if, you know, the way that, you know, in a more traditional model, you would scale through adding more resources. Well, trying to do that, you know, there's a couple of problems happening is that your traditional, like, I'm just going to put out more advertisements for my jobs and try to get more candidates. That's not necessarily working. Or I'm going to throw more bodies at a broken process. Well, that's not working either. And the fact that all these jobs are posted means like there's a shortage of recruiters too. Like, recruiting is now the most in-demand position, most marketed position out there. It crossed over the curve from, I think, computer engineering or you know, one of those that. So you can't find the resources to help you, and what you've been doing historically isn't working in this market. And it just, but yet the people that you have in your organization are critical for the future success and the growth of your business. And so the need is there to get this right. The resource model that used to deliver it in the past just isn't working. And so question that, what do people do? Like now, so maybe you want to spend a time talking a little bit about like what a traditional model was, and then we can get into like what more modern practices are?
Sure. I mean, I think in my mind, there's probably a lot of versions of the traditional model, but it's some sort of like outdated technology stack that you're reviewing on a five-year basis that doesn't really work, really not adding any value. It's maybe more of a check-the-box sort of thing. It's a process that is different across your different managers, your different roles, offices, et cetera. And there's not a lot of data that's flowing through this process that's allowing people to make decisions. It's very much a let's put out the fires versus let's think about the long-term sort of feeling. And I think it was always good enough. And I think even in sort of the tail end of this absurd bull market that we were in pre-COVID, when unemployment was at all-time lows, it was still actually like good enough to do that stuff and then just sort of throw some money at recruiters or job board spend or whatever to fill recs. And you weren't obviously a very efficient or aspirational organization, but you were still getting the job done. It's not like the company was failing because you couldn't fill people. So yeah, that's sort of the way I think about it. How about you?
Yeah, I think that's a great way. You know, I think good enough is a great way to characterize it. I don't know, like I haven't been in the space, you know, everyone I talked to, if they were in a more traditional model, never felt good about it, but had really difficult time getting approval for business cases or investment or things, because it was just always like, this is kind of what we've done and it's good enough. And you're right, like your tech stack sometimes included like an ATS and maybe a CRM, but it wasn't anything around creating an experience or an efficient experience that's very different and technology as the basis of that and a key enabler. It was more, hey, I've got these systems that manage a workflow and it's clunky and I have to kind of manually move through each toll gate in order to actually, you know, people see my jobs because I blast them all over Indeed or whatever, but they're not really well written. And maybe somebody, you know, enough people click on them and then to apply, I've got to log into a couple separate places and fill out a bunch of fields. And then the biggest problem with a more traditional model was because it wasn't tech enabled and it was a heavy kind of manual transaction by humans in the process was that there was all this like finish a toll gate and then wait, like do something and then wait and do something and wait. And it was all like driven by the organization. And even though we talked like historically, we've talked about candidate experience, but it wasn't truly designed with the candidate experience or how the candidate would view the opportunities and make a decision on them. It was just kind of like, well, they need our job at some point. So we'll kind of do some stuff here, but they're going to go through that pain because they need our job. Well, that's all changed, right? And so those clunky processes and approaches are what was good enough and they could kind of get through it and still get what they needed just isn't good enough anymore. And it's just not working.
I think there are always these best-in-class companies that did a great job of building their employer brand, building a pipeline, having a definitely better than good enough candidate experience and workflows. A lot of them are companies that rely the most on talent and were in extremely competitive environments to begin with, like Goldman Sachs or Google or McKinsey or some of these hedge funds like Citadel that have devoted a tremendous amount of resources to it. And I guess they were sort of always in a market where it was, you know, a 1% unemployment rate or something like that. And there was also, in many of these cases, a huge gap in the output of somebody who was a really good worker and somebody who was an excellent worker. In finance or in technology, it's just sort of inherently scalable, the impact that you can have by making good decisions, writing good code. That one individual, that the whole like 10x engineer sort of thing, or that hedge fund manager who manages $1 billion versus somebody who's really good who manages 100 million. And so I guess I always look to those companies as sort of a North Star. And now we sort of all have to, because we're all in the same world, whether you're hiring people to staff a restaurant. We've got restaurants all over the place here who like aren't open sometimes. Yeah. There's not enough people, or you're building a software company, or you're running a manufacturing plant, or whatever the case may be. What are some of the things that you look at in terms of this like modern recruiting stack, what like best in class companies are doing, and where other people kind of have to move?
It's a really interesting environment right now, because as you talked about, you know, there were some what we call best in class, or there's always leaders in the market who kind of evolve first, and they create these best-in-class environments. The challenge we have now is like everybody needs to do that. Like it's just, you know, right? You can't survive without it. So everybody needs to move in this direction. And some of the things that make it different is thinking about it from less of an organization-driven process to more of a candidate-driven process. So how do you remove the friction in your process? And how do you remove the friction in your talent acquisition, talent selection processes in order to enable an efficient and positive experience by the candidate? How can you engage them differently and allow them to move at their pace, not your pace? How can you, from your resources that you have on your team, what are they doing and how can you free them up from lower value transactional elements where in a traditional model, recruiting resources are spending 60 to 80% of their time, it's been found, on transactional elements, where can you leverage technology in your technology stack to either automate or manage the workflow for you, or rank and assess candidates to help in the process, to free up your resources for higher value activities, such as developing the recruitment marketing plans, understanding the talent landscape by different geographies and market data, working with hiring managers and leaders on a true talent plan, a strategic talent plan and talent profiles to figure out how do we really address the challenges in this market. So freeing up those recruiting resources from the scheduling interviews, pre-screening, you know, resumes and candidates, back and forth on basic details with candidates and hiring managers, freeing them up from those types of activities to the more strategic elements, I think is really a big difference maker, along with just taking something that historically has been 50 to 70 days to complete to taking that down for your high volume stuff to 3 days to 2 weeks, or, you know, for your professional, cutting half the time out of that and making it much easier, I think are some of the, that's not all inclusive, but that's some of the components that would describe a more modern experience and what I see in the market.
I think it's great because the world is moving towards more automation, not less. And some people are afraid of that. And it is really scary, actually. But for the most part, humans are still needed, right? They're needed more than ever. And that's not going to change in the near term. And this is just the way that you can't fight against the tide, unfortunately. And something like scheduling, it's like, why are we having somebody spend so much time on scheduling and being slow to reply to emails and making errors? And when a computer can do that better than a human can do it, and that human, it's not like the funnest job in the world. It kind of sucks. And so why not allow that person to have a better job, learn new skills, you save time as a company, and you have create a better candidate experience? That's a sort of a no-brainer across the board. And there are other examples of that, particularly, I think, in the high volume recruiting realm, where you can literally have like a 3 day time to hire, which is kind of insane, but it's actually happening.
Yeah. I mean, there's some that are doing it real time, almost like borderline real time. There's some organizations that have completely automated and made it autonomous. So that's pretty wild. But I would say, like, what's interesting, you hit on an interesting point there, is that, you know, it's not eliminating humans from the process. It's really like reallocating their time and effort to higher value, more interesting work. And that's it. Like, you still need them in the process, and they're a critical component of your process. The thing that we haven't, like, everyone has talked about being, you know, the robots, you know, coming and AI replacing humans, and oh, we should be afraid of that. I think you need to embrace it. And what you should be afraid of is not embracing it, because what's happening, actually happening in the space, is those recruiters and those resources with organizations who aren't embracing technology. I just saw a stat that was published last week that 50% of the recruiting resources would leave their job for another organization that had a better tech stack, and which is a crazy.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. And that, but that's real. Is like, because why would I want to sit here and just screen 1,000 resumes a day and schedule 100 interviews a day when I can go over here and technology does a lot of that upfront transactional work for me, and I can spend my time where I add way more value and I'm more strategic, where I'm talking about, you know, what needs to be done in the business with business leaders and understanding the market and working on plans and things. Like, it's a different experience for the recruiter too, which is critical. And not to mention the modern approach, like, the name of the game is conversion through this process too, right? It's not just throw more volume at the front end into a broken process. It's, you have to set your entire stack and your process and your experiencing in a way that candidates can find their information and convert through each stage of your workflow. If you have that and more candidates are engaging in a easier, frictionless process and converting through the process to where they engage with the human elements or the humans in your process, like, that makes their job easier, because they're not chasing all these people where you've got all this candidate drop off through the process too.
I think it's like, sometimes it's easier to think about things in terms of analogs. And it's kind of like, imagine you were running like a McDonald's franchise, and it's like, oh, we could replace the people that take the orders and take the money with like a machine, which probably happened in the near term, I would imagine. I haven't been in McDonald's in a while, but maybe it's already happening. And we need 10 managers, right? And it's like, oh, okay, we've got 10 cashiers. We can make them all managers now. And those people are learning new skills. It's a more interesting job. They get paid more. And as McDonald's, it's like, hey, we're labor constrained anyway, so this is amazing, right? And then think about like if Burger King didn't upskill or didn't get that technology, like, would you want to work at Burger King? Like, nobody wants to work at Burger King, just like nobody wants to work at a company that's using like a 10-year-old version of SAP or something as their technology. And it's just like, it sucks to be a recruiter. It's bad to be an HR coordinator. Like, everything about it is just like suboptimal. And so, yeah, it's either like do it or go work at Burger King or that company with like the super old technology. And I don't know what your end game is there. Just like be bored and frustrated at work and like work with other people who want to be bored and frustrated. But otherwise, you kind of have to start doing this stuff.
I mean, a traditional model or what I've heard for years has been, I guess, pre-COVID, it was always around, we're overloaded. You know, we don't have any capacity in the recruiting space. And all of the systems and processes and investment was designed more with the organization in mind, and the two key stakeholders that had the least say in what the experience really was the recruiters and the candidates. And like, it's kind of like a day of reckoning right now, is that like, that's coming to roost now, because it's like the recruiters and the candidates are the most critical stakeholders in your design, and you better take their experience into account. Otherwise you can't win in this environment. And so like, it's really important. Like, I just think of this example of somebody that I was working with and talking with, you know, a few months ago, and they had just gone through this process of really taking a hard look at their experience and focusing a lot on the recruiting resource constraints and the candidate issues and constraints. And they figured out like, hey, it's taking us on average like 12 or 13 days once somebody applies to reconnect with them and get their first discussion like on the books and schedule. That waiting period, and then, you know, at the same time, that waiting period for a candidate is awful and frustrating and makes you just want to say, forget it, I'm going somewhere else. And then that, you know, people aren't just sitting around waiting to schedule that stuff. They have an army of people trying to coordinate times back and forth and find openings on schedules and fit it in. And that's awful from their experience as well. So on both sides of that, it was just super painful. Well, in working with them and trying to figure out like, how can you look at a tech stack that might address this issue and integrate with your existing systems and everything? They ended up designing something that went from like 12 or 13 days, literally down to like 15 minutes, like crazy. It can be done. It seems impossible and sounds impossible, but it's not. Like, the capabilities of the solutions that are available in this marketplace, I'll say, can be amazing and are amazing, but you've got to get that fit right to get the right solutions for what your specific needs are. But like, those results and that experience, like, that's a big difference.
That's huge. And I think one of the challenging parts of all this is like, it's a lot of work. You know, like, if you want to map out the candidate experience and think about like every different part of the journey and how you can improve it, that's definitely a really comprehensive and robust way of doing it. But even to what you said, which is essentially like, look at the last like 10 people that made it to like the final interviews for a given role and try to piece together like, what was their experience? What was their journey? And where are the things that are just absurd? You know, like, they apply and they don't hear back for 2 weeks, or they have the phone screen and they don't hear back from 2 weeks, or it's unclear what the next step is or whatever. Put yourself in those shoes and you're going to find the biggest gaps where you can make a difference. And it does make a difference, and you can see it in your conversion rates. You obviously see in your time to fill, but you're also going to see it, especially for the higher volume stuff, in just your ability to hire more people, because you're going to beat your competition. And that's kind of what it's all about now. Like, there's the very real like macro factor of like, there's not enough people to do jobs. But if you're able to beat your competition, then it matters a lot less for you.
The ROI or the business case for getting this right is off the charts right now, right? Because it is so hard and everybody is facing the same challenge, that if you figure this out and you get this right, your opportunity to grow and scale and beat your competition, you've just kind of 10x'd the probability of that happening by getting the recruiting stuff right. And it's interesting, the space. And I'll say, like, it's easy for us to talk about it. And I see it all the time. And when I'm working with folks or whatever, like it's really hard for these TA leaders. And I feel for them because like you have to do this, but every day you and your teams are getting beat over the head with like, we don't have anybody to do this job. And there's this fire and that fire. And then like, they know like, hey, look, there's a more modern approach to this, but they can't just get a blank check to do it. Right. And they have to explain it to people in a way that they understand it and that they can get buy-in for the investment. And even when they do get the investment, like trying to navigate this recruiting technology ecosystem or marketplace is completely overwhelming because they don't spend every day in it like you and I do, Phil, right? They don't understand like what solutions are working and in which organization and what application and who's over promising and going to under deliver for me and who can like, who's just selling and not trying to focus on my value. And like, it's scary for TA leaders who don't spend every day in this space to go out and try to build this tech stack or figure out what they need, even after they get the, if they can get the investment. Like it's a big challenge to understand first what a modern approach is. It's another challenge to get buy-in and support for the investment. And then it's a huge challenge to build your plan and select the right solutions that are going to deliver what you need.
It's unbelievably difficult. And I feel like that's why you and I both get out of bed in the mornings to help make this easier in two different ways, obviously, that we're attacking that issue. I guess my advice to people out there would be, if you can afford it, get a consultant, get somebody who's been there, done that, and knows what's going on and worked with some really great companies and has the numbers to back up what they're talking about. And if you can't, you got to find somebody in your organization who's willing to essentially mentor you and help you think through, how do I get buy-in? How do I think about the ROI and the business case? How do I do vendor selection? Because somebody in marketing has figured this out, somebody in sales, somebody in product or operations. And if you're lucky, they're willing to sort of almost be like your boss throughout this project and help you through it. Unfortunately, it is really, really difficult. But I think what's kind of interesting about this point in time is that, and this is a little bit of a stretch, but in macroeconomics, there's this whole idea of what's called Dutch disease, which is when a country has a natural resource that just gives it tons of money and they don't have to do much. They basically get really lazy and they get bad at like everything. And the flip side of, in most of those countries, like oil rich countries or gold rich or whatever. And the flip side of that would be like Korea or Japan or Taiwan, where like they don't really have any natural resources. And so they've had to innovate and essentially beat out all their other competition. And it's led to an amazing amount of innovation and competitive advantages and, you know, semiconductors and making container ships and electronics and cars and all this other stuff. And I feel like these sort of tough times make you think really, really hard about this job description, the follow-up from the job description and like all these discrete steps. And it actually leads to a lot of really good, amazing things that are good for your company, good for candidates, recruiters, and for yourself and your own career. And so despite the challenge, there are some amazing things that can come out of it.
Absolutely. And I think that type of pressure, requirement, or scarcity, you know, creates some amazing innovation, to your point. I love your recommendation. I'm getting advice from other areas that have built those plans and maybe in more of a mature environment and figured that out. I think that's great. Obviously, I would love to work with as many people as possible and help as many people as possible, but it's just not real. And so I think it's one of those things that my advice is always like, start with your plan and get that advice from other people, get that advice from people that have expertise, but be planful and thoughtful in your approach on what it is you're trying to accomplish, what the business value is going to be. If you're going to make an investment, how is that going to pay off to the organization and to all your key stakeholders? And then also like make sure like where I see people falling down is like they'll just take a recommendation from somebody else that had a success and then they'll just kind of run with it without really thinking like that might work in my business, but how are we the same? How are we different? And more importantly, is that really my biggest issue? Or just because I heard of this, did it in my mind make me think it was? And And so that's where usually when we come into organizations, I see that a lot where they've got some ideas and they know like some challenges that they're having that they need to address, but they haven't really dug deep to prioritize those that will make the biggest impact or create the most value for the business and then sequence them in a logical kind of phase or roadmap type of approach. So start with a plan and be really deliberate in thinking on where your issues are in current state. How do you prioritize that? And then when you go out to the market and you're looking for solutions, like be careful and thoughtful there. Don't just do like a Google search and see who comes up and like use sites like yours or use ways that you can leverage your requirements and your specific needs to sort and sift through that market.
At the risk of giving generalized advice that isn't applicable to everybody, which I do think is a real challenge. And I even see it in like Facebook groups. Someone's like, what's a really good ATS? And someone's like, Workable. And it's like, never used it, but heard it's really good.
Yeah, and oh, by the way, you just asked a question and gave no requirements.
Right, exactly. How big is your company? What people are you hiring? Are you based in the US? So at the risk of that, like, what are some of the common things that you recommend to companies? Like maybe a couple of things that it's like most companies should do this, this, and this.
Interesting question. We could spend a lot of time on this. I appreciate you framing it the way you did, because you and I have had this conversation before. It might be like, I don't know if it's the biggest challenge or problem kind of in the TA technology marketplace today or HR technology place today, but it's easily top five, I would say, is just looking for very general recommendations and people not understanding requirements or specific needs and making just general recommendations on a particular solution. Like, it's very dangerous. And people should be very, very aware of that point and be careful. Also, the other part of that equation is like, no offense to procurement departments or whatever, but don't let somebody other than you lead the process. Like, partner with procurement and IT. It's your experience, it's your results, it's your performance. This is your system and the other HR partners. Like, this is a partnership, but the TA folks for TA technology, they need to lead. And you need to lead. And don't just turn it over to procurement who like does a bunch of RFPs and then they it turns into a cost-based type of thing or whatever. Like, I think those are a couple areas. And then some things that, to get to your actual question, some things that I see quite a bit is like, so I'll see a situation a lot where organizations will come to me in one of two fashions. One, they made a recent kind of rip and replace ATS replacement. They thought that it was going to address a majority of their issues by making an ATS change. And then they come to realize like, oh, I still have a bunch of gaps here I need to address. Or another one would be like, they get started and either do an RFP or are looking through something and they get so overwhelmed that they don't know what to do. And so then they'll come in and we'll chat. But I think some key areas would be like the automation pieces, I think is really big because they can't find resources now to do the manual transactions. And they've realized like it's too many candidates are dropping off and it's just taking way too long. So like, I have a capacity issue, I've got an efficiency issue, and I've got a conversion issue. In order to address that, I need technology to help enable that. And so that would be like more like usually post-application through interview, kind of like, how do we automate and streamline those activities and processes and experience? So that's a common kind of solution that we're looking to address. I think the other one would be more on the front end is that historically, and a lot of folks have just, as you said, like just posted a bunch of stuff to Indeed or ZipRecruiter or back in the day, Monster and CareerBuilder, whatever. They just like post a bunch of jobs and maybe they have a CRM where they've kind of tried to build the talent community, but it's gone as far as that. And they don't really optimize that and know how to really engage the candidates, segment the candidates, rank the candidates for opportunities, get them to apply and through the process. And so there's tools that can really optimize that and also optimize your spend. Like, if you're not careful in this, like, you could just job advertise yourself to death right? And not get any candidates. So you've got to be really systematic and thoughtful in your approach there. Otherwise, you're just like, there's people that are doubling and tripling their spend on that and not getting any more throughput.
That's insane. It's all about the conversion rates and process. And I feel like that's another way that a lot of people fall down. They don't know those numbers. They don't know what percentage of applicants from a given channel make it to the next part of the process and so on. And is it good or bad? You know, it's like, oh, we got a 20% phone screen rate. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? You know, you got to have some relevant benchmark.
Do you see, and like, because you get inbound stuff and you get a lot of people that you, like a ton of people that go to your site and look for information, but you have a lot of people that ask questions too. So like, what questions do you see other than kind of like the scary one you said before of like, hey, I need a new ATS, who's good? Or I need a new CRM, who's good? Like, what other things do you see that are pretty common as well?
I think a lot of folks are definitely looking for those like core solutions like ATS, HRIS, some CRM, et cetera. I think that a lot of people are looking at stuff that they heard about through conference or podcast, or they saw it on LinkedIn and it's like, hey, we want to use AI in recruiting now. It's like, oh, okay. Like, what do you think that means? Do you think that is like a chatbot on your career site? Do you think it's a sourcing technology? Do you think it's assessments? I think that on the vendor side of things, one of the interesting things is it's becoming a more confusing marketplace because so many vendors want to position themselves as something you've never seen before. So it's like, we're not an assessment tool. We're a talent intelligence tool. And I'm like, what does talent intelligence mean? Like, I don't know what talent intelligence means. And I do demos like all week long with bigger tech vendors. Or like, you know, we're a conversational recruiting. Okay. Like, what does that mean? You know, like that's like crazy. And from a practitioner's perspective, it's like, I'm going to spend 5 to 10% of my time on tech. I don't want to learn what talent intelligence means. Just like, tell me what it does, right? Is this like, what bucket is this in?
I agree. Like, I don't want to be a translator. I want to help solve problems, right? Like,
Exactly.
I agree. It's confusing the marketplace. I also like, I tell a lot of my clients, like, beware the platform, right? It's just like, be careful, because I think the more that the solutions evolve and with all the M&A activity that's happening in the space and things like that, the talent acquisition marketplace from a tech perspective is different than a lot of other functions where the best system wins. This is very much an ecosystem play, and it's all about APIs and integrations and creating that experience using whatever solutions are the best fit for your specific needs, but integrating them in a seamless fashion, which makes it real difficult. And it seems like a lot of solutions are like marketing very general. Like, we can fix all your problems, or just come with us and we're a full platform that'll, you know, fix everything soup to nuts. And just like, beware of that, because maybe some of them can on your specific needs, but very rarely is that the case.
I think for smaller companies, it can totally make sense to go the suite. You want something that's, you know, HRIS plus ATS plus some other stuff combined, but you're not going to get the best of all worlds that way. I actually saw an interesting post yesterday about people's perceptions of applicant tracking systems. And the one with the most brand recognition now and the highest positivity of all the big ones is Greenhouse. And I think that the reason why they've done so well is because they were really the first ATS to have robust open APIs. And so if you went to a trade show, every single vendor was like, yeah, we integrate with Greenhouse. That was the first one we did because it's so easy. I think that's interesting. I think other vendors will probably follow suit, which is great for practitioners, because like, if you have a scheduling tech tool you really love and you switch from, you know, ABC to XYZ ATS, you can just keep those point solutions with you, which is really nice.
I agree. It's nice. And I agree that they're having some success as a result of that. And definitely the perception and the user interface and things like that. So I think I could see how that would be the case. Again, they're not the right fit for everybody. Like, you got to be careful, but I can understand why that perception is there. And I think the future, my perspective on the future is that it's moving very much in that direction, is that the days of, you know, buy a big, heavy, clunky system, put it in, sit on it for 10 years and have every new release just address every need that you have. Like, that's long gone. And even like, even having your stuff on 3-year agreements now, like the amount of change that happens in this tech space in 3 years is crazy. And not to mention like your expertise, like I love when you talk about like the life, like technology life cycle or business life cycle in tech. And when, you know, the difference of the experience with an organization when they go from like a Series B, Series C to like your Series E, or maybe going into like going to go ahead and go open market or get bought by somebody, or, you know, things like that. Like it dramatically changes what it's like to experience with those people. And that needs to be part of your methodology to determine who to partner with.
Yeah, without a doubt. I think one of the other things that a lot of companies are overlooking these days as well is we're obviously both like very like tech and like operations and systems oriented people. But what's kind of interesting is when I talk to candidates, when I talk to actually people who are buying businesses, one of the core parts of diligence now is the employer brand and employee value propositions, because labor is such an important part of now every company. And it's really the limiting factor for so many businesses. When companies are buying other companies, it's like, okay, why do people work here? And why do people stay working here, especially relative to competition? And I think that most talent acquisition organizations don't do the best job in the world of deeply understanding that by talking to their employees and saying, like, when you tell your friends where you work, what do you say? You know, good and bad, like, just like, let us have it sort of thing. And then taking that and putting it into the job description, the welcome email, the phone screen script, you know, the whole sort of shebang, onboarding, et cetera. But that, and I'm like not so much like a creative, you know, thinker and like the fluff and all that stuff, but it actually really matters. And you can see it in the data as well when you look at the conversion rates and kind of how your pipeline is functioning.
Yeah, it matters a tremendous amount. It's a heavy lift to do it, right? But it's something that if the entire organization gets behind it and you're not overly aspirational in what you put out there, it's actually real. Like, it matters a lot. And I agree. I also agree with the point that you made around that company, like, or organizations are looking at buying companies on how that plays into their equation. I actually just talked to a private equity firm this morning, and they were just kind of picking my brain on what they should be looking for from a recruiting perspective. Like, they have that as a critical component of their due diligence. And his comment was, hey, we're looking at 32 companies right now. All 32 have recruiting issues. And it is a major red flag for us in this market, because we can't scale these organizations without having that figured out. So it was a really interesting conversation. And again, it further makes our point that we made at the beginning, that this is the most difficult market we've ever seen. I will say, I'm super excited, because this is the golden opportunity for my fellow folks in the TA space, right? This is the opportunity to stand up and lead and shine. And this is really cool time, very challenging, but really cool. So it's neat to see that from my perspective, but challenging. And I get it. Like, it, from a business perspective, if you're going to buy an organization or invest in an organization and they don't have a good recruitment or talent brand, they don't have a good value proposition, they haven't invested in recruiting, so they're in that traditional model where they can't really get resources in order to deliver their service or product or scale, like, that they're in big trouble right now.
I agree. Unfortunately, an investor in a company that they have a very poor employee value proposition, it's extremely hard work outside in a very cold place. And nobody wants to do that job, no matter how much you pay them. And this company, it could be 5x the size in terms of revenue if they had the employees. And it's been a really challenging go for this business. What advice would you have for somebody who is fighting the fires, is running as hard as they can on the treadmill, and is like, I don't have time to do this? Is it like, you got to make time, or is there something you can cut out of your job? Do you hire somebody to do this? Like, what should they do?
I mean, that's a hard question, and I get it. I've been in that space, and I have a ton of friends that are in that space still, where like the fires are burning so hot right now in this environment to even find 10 minutes to think is really hard. And so it probably depends on your environment. If you're an organization that welcomes like insight or thought leadership or help from outside, then definitely find somebody to help. If your organization is not supportive of that, then I think, unfortunately, like you're never going to, like I always say this comment to people, you're never going to be free to be strategic or do what you want to do if you don't get your tech stack right. And if you don't fix this, so you got to, like, you just, you know what, if you're spending 90 hours a week, you got to spend an extra 5 to find, if you can't bring in somebody to help you navigate that and outsource that and bring an expert to help you solve that, you're going to have to do that and get to educate yourself to be able to at least start the plan to get buy-in to start fixing it. There aren't any easy buttons. There are solution providers and places that can help make it a lot easier, but it's like you have to do it and you're going to have to just find time to do it, because if you don't, like you just keep doing more of the same. Like there, it'll never be any different if you keep doing the same.
It's almost like you have to kind of look at your time on like a 6 to 12 month horizon and realize that. And it's, I always think about stuff as like an investor, I guess. And like, you know, you're going to get a return from everything and you're going to get a return from answering those emails or doing that phone screen. But if you sacrifice and you sort of invest that time into something that's more scalable, you're going to, over the 6 to 9 months time horizon, you're going to feel a lot better about your job and you're going to be able to do more and you're going to be able to do more stuff that will save you more time.
One of my clients and friends, like we were having a discussion and he brought up an awesome point on how he got buy-in. He said, I just looked at a few key data points. I looked at kind of how many candidates we were getting for each position, what our conversion rate was from a number of candidates to actual hires in our current process. I was looking at our turnover rates for people internal to the business, and then what our projected company growth rates were. And I just went to the, used those key data points, went to the leadership team and said, in the current environment, if we do not invest in change, it will take us 10 years to fill the jobs we have today. It's that simple. And like, that's what he needed to like, and he was working, I think he was working 100 hour weeks trying to fix some stuff and figure it out and put the fires out. Like it was a crazy amount of work. And he finally just said, what's something that's going to resonate? And he made those comments to the executive team and got buy-in almost immediately, like, go find somebody to help you fix this and create what we need so we can recognize our growth plans. Because otherwise, forget all your strategic growth plans. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah. And if your leadership team is one of the, you know, hiring one of those 14,000 recruiters that were posted one day last week, everybody's feeling the pain. They're releasing budget. Hey, let's reallocate that. Getting another body to slam their head against the wall is going to be less effective than fixing something that will decrease the time you respond to a candidate from 15 days to 15 minutes, without a doubt. And it's probably about the same amount of money.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the ROI is off the charts once you do that. I mean, it's not an immediate, right? There's time in this, to time for the planning, time for identifying the solutions, getting them implemented and going. But like, it's also not multiple years. Like it's, your ROI is inside of the year if you do it right.
And then you go back to the exec team. You're like, hey, we did this thing. We got these results. Now we got to do the next thing. Give us the money. Give us the buy-in.
It's another big challenge, right? As I mentioned before, is like, because it's so different outside of the talent space, not everybody really is paying attention to, like, they hear the headlines and stuff like that, but not everyone believes that it's that different right now. Like, hey, just like, you're not working hard enough or you're not putting forth the effort, like just do more of what you were doing before and that should work just fine. Why isn't it? Like, it takes some education too, to bring people up to like, hey, this is market data. This is the information. Here's some information on what's happening, to try to get people to more clearly understand market conditions and what a modern approach is and how we get there. Like that's not an easy task either.
Yeah, there's help wanted signs and there's newspaper articles and everything, but it's easy for somebody to just assume these people aren't doing their jobs, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed our conversation and you didn't disappoint in having me learn new stuff. Yeah. Thanks for the time. Thanks for chatting.
No, thank you. I appreciate it. I look forward to more of these. We talked about committing to getting together and having some conversations like this as much as we can. And I always learn stuff from you too. And I appreciate your perspective and look forward to the next time we can do it.
Sounds good.
All right, Phil. Thanks.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. See ya.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Talent Acquisition Leaders Podcast. If something we said today resonated with you, please subscribe, rate, and download our podcast and share the episode with your network. Ready to transform your recruiting practices with leading-edge technology just like our other clients at 3M, Comcast, Stryker, and Walgreens? Then reach out at sagemarkhr.com for a free consultation.